Chapter 30. The Goldenfels was rigged for landing, her sails furled and her antennas telescoped and folded. Daniel's first thought was to drop into the matrix immediately and set the sails there. Many astrogators couldn't track another ship after it left sidereal space, and some wouldn't even try. The Alliance had more than its share of able captains, however. If the Blucher was commanded by one of them, the heavy cruiser would appear within seconds of when the Goldenfels shifted back into normal space the first time. Daniel found it wise to assume that his enemy was just as competent as he was. "Wojins, both watches," Daniel ordered. He hated to send riggers out while the ship was accelerating, but sometimes you don't have a choice. "Rig the main courses of dorsal A and starboard A, both at 29 degrees starboard inclination. Move it, spacers!" The riggers were spread through the ship doing damage control, but at least they were suited up. Wojins would have the sail set within minutes, given the Goldenfels maneuvering from the moment it entered the Matrix. The Blucher had fleet-standard optical pickups, as good as those of the RCN, but nobody at 400,000 miles could tell an angle of 29 degrees from 31 or 27. That was a wide enough variation that the heavy cruiser would have to quarter the region instead of landing directly on top of her wallowing prey. Only the very best astrogators could hope to follow a trail through the matrix that was hours old. There were pirate captains who managed the trick regularly, of course. It would have been child's play for Uncle Stacy, and Lieutenant Daniel Leary had managed it also. If the Blucher had a commander of that quality, the Goldenfels wasn't going to escape, and she wasn't going to fight a successful battle against a heavy cruiser. Daniel smiled as his fingers hammered in additional calculations into his computer, which didn't mean they wouldn't fight. When he had had leisure, he'd checked the status of the Goldenfels' weaponry, not that he expected to like what he learned. Adele inserted another text at the bottom of his display. "The Blucher's commander is Captain Raphael Semis. Do you wish details of his service?" "Thank you, Adele," Daniel said on his two-way link. He continued to type. He wasn't familiar with this region. He studied the return to the rendezvous with the Princess Cecile, but he didn't want to head back directly in case they were pursued. "The identification is sufficient. I'm aware of the gentleman." Now he was quite sure they'd be pursued. Daniel didn't remember the name of every Alliance officer he'd heard in passing, but when Oliver Semis mentioned at the funeral that he and his brother Raphael had met Uncle Stacy while they were serving under the great Captain Lawrence, that Daniel had remembered. Lawrence gave the officers under him the opportunity to become first-class astrogators. And if they failed to do so, Lawrence railroaded them out of the fleet. Raphael Semis had survived. Well, perhaps Daniel would get lucky with a missile, and the Goldenfels mounted heavy guns as well. Maybe there was a way. A red legend flashed into Daniel's display. SA main set. Adele had relayed the signal from Wojcins on the hull and highlighted it. As soon as the dorsal sail was another legend, this time a message from Pasternak. Reaction mass tanks at 47%, switch to high drive. Adele must be filtering all his communications. It wasn't RCN policy, but it was the right thing now, with Adele Mundy making the choices and not enough time to do half of what had to be done. Ordinarily, a ship switched from plasma thrusters to its much more efficient high drive as soon as it rose out of an atmosphere. Though Gehenna was a large satellite, its atmosphere was thin enough to be called hard vacuum for most purposes. But the limited power available from the jury-rigged high drive and the present desperate need made Daniel hesitate. Wojins signaled, DA main set. "Ship, this is six," Daniel said, shutting down the thrusters. "Prepare to enter the matrix." "Entering matrix now." Daniel felt the shutter of the vessel slipping into a bubble of normal space driving through space-times more alien than the heart of a sun. The sensation was by now long familiar, but it wasn't and probably would never become comfortable. The physicist said that nothing changed. The Goldenfels herself and the volume bounded by the tips of her antennas remained a part of the universe in which the vessel was built and her crew was born. The physicists were wrong. A one-time passenger could have told them that, let alone veteran spacers with hundreds or thousands of hours in the matrix. The ship might remain part of normal space, but something interpenetrated it. You could feel the difference, a scratchy sensation like wearing another man's skin beneath your own, and sometimes you saw things. Once Daniel had seen a group of humans shambling down a corridor identical to that of the Swiftsure, the ship on which he was training. They were naked and blank-eyed. Behind them strolled a feathered biped with compound eyes. It stared at Daniel in shock and horror before vanishing with its charges as suddenly as an image tilts away in a mirror. Sometimes you saw things that weren't real, things that Daniel told himself couldn't ever have been real. "Ship, this is six." His face had fallen into a mechanical smile at that memory, that false memory. When he realized, his expression turned into self-wry amusement. "I've programmed our course. I'm going into the hull now to supervise the rig. In 7 hours, we'll drop back to take a star sighting, then proceed to rendezvous with the Princess Cecile. I estimate that'll take another 18.5 hours. He took a deep breath and added, Sissies, there's a possibility that we're not done fighting just yet. You deserve a chance to rest, but we all know that life isn't fair. If things work out as they may, despite my best efforts, I'm confident that Alliance Cruiser will know it's been in a fight. 6 out. He would check the armament, but not just now. Daniel started to get up from his couch. The shock harness still gripped him. He touched the release stud and rose again, smiling at himself. He was more tired, more wrung out, than he realized. Well, he'd get some rest when he could, but that wouldn't be till they took their star sight in 7 hours' time, and maybe not even then. Mistress Vessi, you have the con, Daniel said, walking toward the airlock. He wouldn't be on the hull long, so he wasn't going to bother donning a rigging suit. He stepped into the airlock. Adele was with him. Daniel looked at her in surprise. She had no business out on the hull. But to tell the truth, neither did he. Wotchens could handle the rigging without the captain on the hull to watch. Daniel's presence was a matter of moral support, that was all. And so was Adele's, of course. Daniel beamed and nodded to her. He had a good team. The Goldenfels might be short-handed, but she had the best crew she carried since commissioning. Of that, he was sure. And if the Blucher caught them, as the Blucher might very well, it'd be just as he'd told his crew. When it was over, they'd know they had been in a fight. When Adele thought about it, the short run from Gehenna had been one of the most physically uncomfortable voyages she'd made. When she wasn't thinking about it, though, and she hadn't thought about it except fleetingly, discomfort really hadn't made any difference. She'd been busy, assimilating the enormous lump of data she scooped from the systems of Lawrence Base when the Alliance forces were bypassing communication safeguards during battle. Most of what she gathered wasn't obviously useful, but if Daniel ever wanted to know, for example, the name of the leading rigger on the Blucher's starboard watch, she'd have him the information in a few flicks of her wands, and you never knew what Daniel would need. Rigging suits were designed for extended use, but for most of the crew, Adele included, were in general duty air suits instead. Fortunately, the damage control parties had managed to keep pressure on one of the heads, though they had to jury-rig a sailcloth airlock to do so. And if they hadn't, worse things happen in wartime. That was one of the many RCN clichés Adele had come to understand were the basic underpinnings of any capable military force— the ability to look at situations and call them by their right names, but still to function. Adele smiled as her wands moved, segregating files involving Alliance contacts with members of the Commonwealth government and bureaucracy. Mr. Sand would want to know that information, but she probably wouldn't want to spread it about Cinnabar generally or even the whole RCN. Many times information was most effective when it wasn't used. The same was true for any other weapon. "Ship, this is Six," Daniel said. He sounded alert, but his voice had an edge as ragged as that of hacksawed steel. "We'll be transferring to the Princess Cecile in orbit, sissies. Our riggers will cross first and set lines, and the rest of us, those who are less familiar with vacuum—" Adele grimaced. She counted as less familiar, and was awkward besides, but some of the power room crew had never been outside a ship before above the atmosphere. "We will be tied to more experienced personnel. Let me emphasize, we don't have a lot of time, which is why I'm making this transfer in orbit rather than on the ground as I'd intended and Mr. Tuning expects. But nobody gets left behind, sissies. We've come this far. We don't leave anybody behind. 6 out. When she looked down the corridor, Adele saw Tech 2 from the power room marshaling the other 6 personnel from the port watch. The starboard watch was on duty, so these superfluous crewmen would be the first to follow the riggers across to the Princess Cecile. 6, this is 6-1, said Vessi on the command channel. We're scheduled to return to normal space in 1 minute. Do you have any further orders for me? Over. Bring us toward the Princess Cecile on thrusters at 1G acceleration, Mistress Vessi. Daniel said this with his voice getting back to normal, like a door that doesn't squeal as loudly after use knocks the rust off its hinges. I'll take the con for the final approach. When I do so, get yourself and your people up on the hull for transfer. Break. Adele glanced over her shoulder toward Daniel. She couldn't see his face because of his rigging suit, but she could easily imagine the smile with which he contemplated the future. It struck her as odd that Daniel genuinely expected to succeed at whatever risky plan he embarked on, and that his belief in success rubbed off on everybody following him, even gloomy cynics like Signals Officer Adele Mundy. That general, completely illogical expectation was at least part of the reason why Daniel and those he commanded usually did win through, if not by the path he'd chosen, then by another path that opened for them because they'd kept their heads when all hell was breaking loose. Ship, this is 6, Daniel said. We're returning to normal space. Adele felt every atom of her body turn inside out. The experience was horrible, worse than any pain and almost as bad as what she felt when leaving sidereal space. Now! She had her work. That drew Adele back from disorientation at once. Occasionally, she wondered how people who didn't lose themselves in their work managed. But a part of her noted that they didn't manage very well, and the other part of her dismissed those people as being beneath a sensible person's concern. There were various ways to find a starship orbiting an uninhabited planet like the one above which the Goldenfels re-entered sidereal space. Because Adele was a signals officer, and because the Goldenfels was a spy ship outfitted with receivers just as sensitive as those Mistress Sands people had installed on the Princess Cecile, she simply searched for RF sources. She found a vessel just visible above the edge of the nameless, dun-colored planet, pinged its identification transponder with a modulated laser to make sure that it was the Princess Cecile and not an unpleasant surprise, and set over the command channel as she locked her laser communicator to follow its target. "Captain, this is Signals. I have a channel open to the Princess Cecile if you'd like to talk to her. Over." Sun turned at his console to stare at her, and she heard Vessi gasp in amazement. Tovera, seated on the other side of the holographic display, gave as broad a grin as Adele ever recalled seeing on her face, which was slightly embarrassing because Adele had to admit that she intended precisely that result. She prepared her search protocols long before the Goldenfels came out of the Matrix. She'd execute them as quickly as possible, not because of the danger the ship was in, but because she consciously and deliberately wanted to astound everybody with her competence. "Goldenfels 6 to RCS Princess Cecile," Daniel said, taking over the transmitter without wasting time responding to Adele's implicit boasting. "Hold your orbit, Mr. Tuning. We'll match velocities with you in 13 minutes. And Mr. Tuning, get your antennas raised. We'll be transferring personnel in vacuum rather than setting down, and I want to be able to get out of the region immediately upon accomplishing that. Goldenfels, over." Adele felt the ship shifting, flexing a little under push of the plasma thrusters. Ordinarily, that was disquieting, but she found it oddly reassuring after the omnidirectional pressure of the Matrix. There was what seemed to Adele an extremely long delay. She realized that though she'd thought her equipment had driven a line of sight to the Princess Cecile, she had no idea of how far the corvette was from them, nor in which direction it was orbiting. Had it gone behind? No, there it was, the signal source still highlighted on her display. "Good God, sir," came Tuning's voice. "That is Sissy 6 to Goldenfels 6. We'll hold as ordered and get our antennas up. Welcome back, sir. Sissy out." He was sending through a microwave transmitter, presumably because nobody on the Princess Cecile had been able to lock a laser on the Goldenfels to respond in that much more secure fashion. Adele pursed her lips. She'd do something about training as soon as she was back aboard the corvette. There was a good deal of bustle behind her. The power room techs were going through the airlock to the hull. Tovera had risen to her feet, wearing a submachine gun slung across her chest. Adele wondered whether she'd be able to use the weapon effectively while wearing an air suit and decided that, being Tovera, she probably would. Tovera was as soulless as a machine, but she had the virtues of a machine as well. The things she was programmed to do, she did superbly well, regardless of circumstances. Adele continued her work, dumping the information she'd gathered on the Goldenfels into the Princess Cecile's computer. She'd only been able to review a fraction of it on the run from the Radiant system, but there'd be plenty of time for proper study when she was back aboard the Princess Cecile. The corvette would be even more crowded than usual, she supposed, with what the former Alliance spacers added to the crew, and a few more Zangan natives on the Sissy doing simple tasks. Well, it didn't matter. "Signals," said the voice of brusque, calm Lieutenant Leary at the command console. "A ship has just re-entered sidereal space 300 km distant. Will you query her and determine who she really is? Over." When a ship moved between sidereal space and the Matrix, it caused a brief warping of space-time. The Goldenfels sensors recognized and reported the distortion on the PPI and probably on the attack and gunnery boards as well. It hadn't appeared on Adele's signals display till she imported it with a twitch of her wands. Her face didn't have much expression, which she supposed was normal for her. The vessel's identification transponder said it was the freighter Citoyen out of Kostroma, but the locator beacon, which normally wouldn't be tripped unless the ship were crippled or derelict, said it was Alliance fleet ship Blucher, as they feared and expected. "It's the Blucher," Adele said on the two-way link. If Daniel wanted the rest of the crew to know the situation, he'd tell them. Beneath her, the thrusters changed note, cutting and then blipping several times before roaring at high output. "Citroyen, this is the Parsifal out of Bryce," Adele announced calmly, using the main transmitter in an upper-class Bryce accent. "Have you met any other Alliance vessels? We were to rendezvous with the Goldenfels out of Pleasuance. Over." When the Blucher pinged them, their identification transponder would announce that they were the Parsifal. If the Blucher signals officer was as skilled as Captain Semmes obviously was, and therefore knew how to trip their locator beacon, it would tell him the same thing. Obsessive behavior is a desirable trait in librarians and spies. The pause this time was one Adele expected. At least a female voice said, "Freighter Parsifal, this is Citoyen. What is the ship in orbit with you? We can see there's a second ship. Answer immediately. Over." A text message from Daniel crawled across the bottom of Adele's display. "Can you remote from helmets, so we leave soonest, most urgent." The letters were in puce, though how Daniel managed to do that was beyond Adele. It was clever of him to have picked up on text as a way of not interfering with critical radio traffic. Adele made several adjustments to the communication system using her wands to control the console. Her handheld unit was already stowed in a pouch attached to her equipment belt. She slipped the wands in their slots and said, "Citoyen, it looks like a derelict warship. Captain Venice is aboard now, taking stock. He won't be able to reply until he's back aboard. We don't have suit radios. Over." Certain that the hookup worked, she unlatched her shock harness. She would have floated away if Daniel hadn't grabbed her and propelled her toward the airlock. Hug and Tovera sandwiched them as usual. There was nobody else left on the Goldenfels bridge or in the A-deck corridor. Adele felt deaf and blind with only the clumsy helmet link to connect her with the outside world. She could shift between communication modes, but she wasn't in touch with all portions of the electro-optical spectrum simultaneously. At a time when she and her companions were within a heartbeat of destruction, she desperately wanted the connection as a security blanket. It gave her the hope that she might be able to do something to help. Adele didn't try to control herself, simply allowed Daniel to muscle her through the hatches like a sack of grain. Weightless or not, her suited body was of respectable mass. He gripped the equipment belt in the middle of her back and simply shoved and jerked. They moved as fast as the unburdened hog did in the lead. The airlock was open, inner and outer hatches both, turning the chamber into a passage. That made sense since they were abandoning the Goldenfels, but it still shocked Adele's sense of rightness. "Parsifal, this is AFS Blucher," a male voice said abruptly. "Shut down everything but your auxiliary power unit. Do not light your thrusters or high drive. You will be destroyed if you do not obey these instructions to the letter. Do you understand? Over." The system's sun was a tiny dot on the black heavens, but so brilliant that Adele's face shield darkened automatically to save her retinas. The light turned the antennas and rigging into knife edges where it struck them, but left them rifts in existence where they were in shadow, unrelieved by the softening of an atmosphere. Adele had spent little time on the hull in normal space. Its appearance in the matrix was a liquid, ever-changing thing, far different from this harshness. "Good God, Blucher," Adele said as Daniel dragged her to a line that she wouldn't have seen if he hadn't bent her arms around for the first time. "Have you gone mad? We're Alliance merchants. We're from Bryce. What do you mean by threatening us? Over." There was the Princess Cecile. Adele assumed it was the Princess Cecile at any rate, but she couldn't really make out the shape. The vessel was half brilliant, half darker than the space between worlds. There, at least widespread atoms glowed with the energy of their creation. The ship was at least a quarter mile distant, though that too was hard to judge under the present light conditions. Daniel clipped the end of a short safety cord to Adele's equipment belt. The other end was already secured to his own. Hogg was pulling himself toward the corvette, his legs crossed around the line connecting the two ships, and his arms pulling him with long, powerful motions. Daniel sailed past Adele, caught the line, and began doing the same. When he reached the 10-foot length of the safety cord, he jerked Adele along with him. She knitted her gloved fingers, making a loop of her arm, and tried not to brush the line as she wobbled after him. "Parsifal, don't worry about what I mean," snarled the signal from the heavy cruiser. "Just do as you're told, or you'll be piecing the story together in hell. Shut off all but minimal systems power until our pinnace boards you, or you'll take the consequences. Blucher, out!" Because there was no air resistance, they were fighting inertia rather than gravity. Daniel continued to accelerate himself and Adele as they neared the Princess Cecile. The corvette's masts were at full extension, spreading nobly in all four directions from her axis, but all furled sails gave her yards a fleshy, uncomfortable look. Adele was echoing both sides of the discussion on Daniel's receiver, but he could speak only on intercom unless she unlocked his unit. She hadn't had time to explain what she was doing, but they didn't dare chance Daniel saying something that would unmask her deception. She'd apologize when they had the time, but the first priority was surviving the next few minutes. "Blucher," Adele said in feigned exasperation, "we'll obey you, but I won't lie and claim I understand. When Captain Vanis gets back, you can take it up with him. Parsifal, out." She'd known a man named Vanis once. He hadn't shown much talent for library work, but he'd tried his best, and his bloody murder was one of the scenes that came into the night to plague her, one of the many scenes by now which she chose in the life. She looked past Daniel's legs. They were really rocketing toward the corvette's hull now. Hogg, just ahead of them, dived into a billowing length of sail fabric stretched between two stanchions. A pair of waiting riggers swung him out of the way. Daniel twisted his body like a skilled gymnast despite the bulk of his rigging suit. His boots hit the left stanchion. He took up the shock by bending his knees, leaving the center of the fabric barrier for Adele. She plowed into it face first. She tried to get her arms out, but she misjudged the distance and was tumbling when she hit with an impact that jarred her head back unpleasantly. She'd be lucky if she got nothing worse than a headache from it. "Cast off!" Daniel shouted over the intercom as hands grabbed Adele. Instead of clanking the weak, permanent magnets in her boot soles down into the steel hull, two riggers held her between them as they followed Daniel. Adele was still tied to him, she realized, though she wasn't sure he remembered it. "And Mr. Chunin, get underway! Now! Now!" "Sir, they're launching!" Chunin shouted, no longer sounding laboriously dull. "They're launching missiles!" The line from the Goldenfels to the Princess Cecile was tied to a bit near the Sissy's open dorsal airlock. Daniel dived into the chamber on top of Hogg, and the riggers carried Adele in just ahead of Tovera. As the outer lock began to cycle close, she felt the jagged note of the high-drive motors starting up. Their vibration was at a much higher frequency than that of the plasma thrusters. "All the more reason to get underway, Chunin," Daniel said in a cheerful voice. He grinned at Adele as he reached for the control to open the inner hatch. On their two-way link, he added, "Where there's life, there's hope. Eh, Adele?" She smiled back. He really did make the absurd seem possible. And so maybe it was.